So it looks like today we're diving into the world of family molds, specifically for injection molding.
Yeah, you seem really keen to get into the details.
I am, actually. We've got a ton of research here, comparisons, real-world examples, all sorts of stuff.
It seems like, from the material you sent, you're not just interested in the how, but also the why. Like, why are family molds so advantageous?
Exactly, you hit the nail on the head. I keep seeing this analogy to a Swiss Army knife pop up, and I'm really curious about that.
Oh, yeah, that Swiss Army knife comparison comes up all the time. It's really about the versatility, I think. The fact that you can create multiple, but like unique parts, all in just a single injection cycle.
So instead of having a separate mold for like each tiny component, you're basically cramming them all into one mega mold.
Yeah, precisely. And that's where you get those cost savings everyone's always talking about. I mean, think about it. Less production time, less wasted material, fewer labor costs, and it all comes down to that single cycle production.
I saw some studies that said material waste can be reduced by like 20% or even more.
Oh, easily. Sometimes way more, depending on the application.
Wow, that's huge, especially when you're talking about big production runs.
Absolutely. It can make a big difference to the bottom line.
Okay, but before we get ahead of ourselves, can we break down how these molds actually like work? I'm picturing a single mold with a bunch of cavities, each one shaped to make a different part.
You got it. Each one of those cavities is basically like a mini mold, all within that larger structure. And the really neat part is that you inject the plastic and it fills all of those cavities at the same time. So you end up with a whole set of like different components all at once.
That's pretty cool. It's like a perfectly synchronized production line all happening inside a single mold.
Yeah, you could say that. It's definitely a delicate process.
I bet it requires a lot of design expertise to get it right.
Oh, absolutely. It's not easy. Designing a family mold is, well, it's kind of like conducting an orchestra. You got to make sure each instrument, each part plays its role perfectly so that the whole thing works in harmony. You have to think about the shape of each part, how it cools, how the material will flow into each cavity. It's pretty complex.
So we keep hearing about the cost savings, right?
Yeah.
But what about the upfront costs? Like designing something that intricate? That's
Man.
going to be expensive, right?
That's a good point. The initial tooling costs, they can definitely be higher, more than, say, a simple single cavity mold.
Right.
But in the long run, those savings, you know, from material, labor, production time, they often outweigh that initial investment, especially if you're producing a lot of parts and you need a lot of variety in those parts and you know you'll be making them consistently.
So it's about thinking long term about the return on investment over time.
Exactly.
Okay, I get that. But how do those savings actually happen? Can you give me an example, like a concrete example?
Sure. Think about a company that makes, let's say, electronics. They need all sorts of plastic parts, right? Casings, buttons, little clips inside, you name it, all different shapes, but all made from the same material.
Okay, yeah.
Traditionally, they might have used like separate molds for each part, but that means multiple setups, more downtime on the machines, and the potential for a lot more wasted material.
So if they switch to a family mold, they can basically combine all those separate processes into one.
That's the idea. It reduces the overall production time for sure, but it also minimizes all those setup and changeover times, and those can really eat into profits. Plus, you end up using less material overall because you're optimizing how that material flows and you're reducing waste from things like runners and gates.
Okay. Yeah, I'm starting to see how that would translate to real savings for a company. It's not just about efficiency in the abstract, but real tangible cost savings that can make a difference. But, and I know we've touched on this a bit, but what about the downsides? It can't all be sunshine and roses, can it?
Well, no, of course not. Like we said, that design complexity is a big one. If you want all those different parts to form correctly and eject from the mold smoothly, you need to plan it meticulously. And you really need a deep understanding of how that molten plastic is going to flow.
So it's not as simple as just like cramming a bunch of cavities into a mold and hoping for the best. You really have to like choreograph the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. And this is where things like gate balancing come into play.
Gate balancing, what's that?
Well, the gate is basically the entry point for the molten plastic into each cavity.
Oh, okay.
And gate balancing means you have to carefully control the size and position of those gates to ensure that each cavity gets just the right amount of material, at the right pressure and speed, too.
I'm guessing that gets pretty complicated when you have all those different cavities with all their different shapes and
Oh,
sizes.
yeah, for sure. It adds a whole other layer of complexity. It's like a dance, you know?
Yeah.
You got to make sure each part is getting what it needs without messing up the others.
So if you don't get that gate balancing right, you could end up with some pretty inconsistent parts.
Exactly. One cavity might get too much material, and then you get flashing or sink marks. Or another might get too little, and then you end up with short shots or incomplete parts. Getting that balance just right is crucial for consistent quality.
Wow. It sounds like there's a lot more to this than meets the eye. What kind of things do they do to achieve that perfect gate balance?
Well, experience and expertise play a huge role, you know, knowing the materials and the process inside and out.
Yeah, of course.
But these days, mold designers also rely heavily on software simulations. These programs can actually analyze how the material is going to flow through the mold, so the engineers can adjust the gate sizes and positions to make sure everything fills properly and minimize defects.
So it's a mix of like art and science, practical knowledge combined with high-tech tools.
I like that, yeah.
Okay. Now, I'm a little confused about something I saw in the research. What's the difference between family molds and multi-cavity molds?
Yeah. They both involve multiple cavities in a single mold, but they excel in different areas. Multi-cavity molds are like the specialists in high-volume production. Like, if you need to make a ton of identical parts, that's where they shine.
Gotcha. Like, what kind of things?
So think bottle caps, beers, anything where you just need a massive quantity of the exact same thing.
Okay, so multi-cavity for lots of identical parts, and family molds are for when you need a variety of different parts all in one go.
Exactly. Family molds are all about embracing that complexity, making a set of different components, often in lower volumes, all at once.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, how about the comparison to like the old school single cavity molds? Are there ever times when those are actually a better choice?
Oh, for sure. Traditional molds still have their place. They're simpler, often cheaper to make initially, and they're great for those big single piece components.
Like what?
Well, imagine something like a car bumper or a big storage container. Those are good examples where a single cavity mold makes more sense.
So if I need a large part, and I need a lot of them, a traditional mold might actually be more cost effective.
It might be, yeah. But the equation changes when you start talking about multiple parts, all different. That's when the family mold's ability to, like, consolidate production and reduce waste really comes into its own.
All right. I think I'm getting a clearer picture now. But before we move on, can you give me some real-world examples of how that Swiss Army knife versatility plays out?
Yeah.
You know, besides the electronics we talked about earlier?
Absolutely. Think about cars, for example.
Yeah.
A car dashboard.
Okay. Yeah.
That's a whole bunch of different parts all put together. Vents, buttons, those control panels, cup holders, everything.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
A well-designed family mold can make, like, a ton of those components in one shot.
Yeah.
Streamlines the whole assembly process.
And I bet that saves those car companies a lot of money, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a huge part of keeping production costs down.
Yeah.
And it's not just cars either. You see it in consumer electronics all the time. Smartphones, laptops, tablets, all those things. They're packed with little plastic parts.
Oh, yeah. Tons of them.
And a family mold can just churn those out. Casings, buttons, all those little brackets and clips inside. The whole shebang.
Yeah.
All in one go.
I'm thinking about, like, circuit boards, you know, with all those tiny components. I bet they use family molds for that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. It's the perfect application. And the thing is, it's not just for small parts either. You see family molds used in all sorts of industries, medical devices. They're great for making those multi-part assemblies for surgical instruments.
Yeah, interesting.
Packaging too, complex container designs, things like that, even toys.
Wait, toys? Really? What kind of toys?
Oh, all sorts. Think about those action figures with all the, you know, the moving parts.
Yeah, yeah.
Arms and legs that bend and stuff. Or those construction sets with all the different pieces that snap together.
Okay, yeah.
Family molds are perfect for that kind of thing. You can make a toy with all these complex interlocking parts and still keep the costs down.
I had no idea family molds were used in so many different ways. It's amazing. But you've talked about the challenges a few times. Can you give me a sense of, like, what are the things that can go wrong? What should manufacturers be careful about?
Well, one of the biggest things is making sure all the different cavities cool evenly.
Oh.
Because different parts, they have different shapes and sizes, right?
Yeah.
So they're naturally going to cool at different rates. And if one part cools too quickly or too slowly, it can warp or shrink, or you can even get defects in the final product.
I guess it's kind of like baking a cake with different layers. They don't all cook at the same time.
That's a great analogy. And just like with that cake, you have to be really careful to get the cooling right. Mold designers use all sorts of tricks to even things out. Like they might put cooling channels in specific spots in the mold.
Okay.
Or use special materials that conduct heat better.
So it's not just about designing the parts themselves. You have to design the mold in a way that makes sure those parts cool and solidify properly.
Absolutely. And it's a real balancing act.
Yep.
Too much cooling in one spot, and you might get sink marks or voids, not enough cooling, and the part might warp or the dimensions might be off.
Yeah, I see.
It's all about finding that sweet spot.
You mentioned materials. Are there certain types of plastic that work better for family molds, especially when you're trying to deal with these uneven cooling issues?
That's a great question. The type of plastic definitely matters. Some plastics are a lot more forgiving than others.
Oh, okay.
They have a wider processing window, we call it.
Oh,
so they're more likely to cool evenly and not warp. For example, amorphous plastics, things like polycarbonate or ABS, those are often good choices for family molds.
So if I was making a part with a really complex shape and I needed the dimensions to be super precise, I might choose one of those amorphous plastics.
It's a good general rule, yeah.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it comes down to the specific application. What are you making? What does the part need to do? How strong does it need to be? All of that factors into the decision.
Makes sense. So we've talked about design complexity and uneven cooling. Are there any other big challenges that come to mind?
Well, there's the issue of material waste. We touched on it earlier, but it's worth emphasizing.
Right, those runners and gates.
Exactly. Those pathways that carry the molten plastic into the mold. Those have to be designed very carefully to minimize the amount of wasted material.
Otherwise, you just end up throwing away a lot of plastic.
That's right. And that's bad for the environment, and it adds to your costs.
So making that runner and gate system as efficient as possible is good for both the bottom line and the planet.
Absolutely. And it all ties back into that gate balancing thing we were talking about. You want to make sure the material flows smoothly and evenly so you're not using more plastic than you absolutely have to.
Okay, so it's this delicate balancing act, trying to minimize waste while also making sure each cavity gets the exact right amount of material.
Very much, yeah.
It sounds tricky.
It can be, but there are a lot of ways to optimize those flow paths. For example, a lot of family molds use what I call the hot runner system.
Oh, I've heard of those. How do they work?
Well, in a regular cold runner system, the material that fills the runners, it cools and solidifies along with the parts.
Right.
So you end up with these like extra bits of plastic, sprues, and runners that you have to throw away. But with a hot runner system, the runners are kept hot the whole time.
Okay.
So the material doesn't solidify, it just keeps flowing.
Oh, I see.
So you get more efficient material flow, less waste, and faster cycle times.
So it's basically like having a little heating system just for those channels to keep everything moving smoothly.
Exactly. And that's especially useful in family molds because you often have more cavities and the material has to travel farther.
Makes sense. Okay, so you said earlier that family molds aren't always the best solution. Are there specific situations where, like, another type of mold would actually be a better fit?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Family molds are great when you need a bunch of different parts and they're all made from the same kind of plastic. But if your project involves multiple materials, things get a lot more complicated.
Because you can't just like mix different plastics together in the same mold, right?
No, not really.
Yeah.
Different plastics melt at different temperatures. They flow differently. They cool differently. If you try to mix them, it just wouldn't work. You'd end up with a big mess.
So like if I had a product that needed, say, a hard plastic for the outer shell and then a softer, more rubbery plastic for the buttons, I couldn't use a family mold for that.
You'd need a different kind of mold, one specifically designed for what we call multi-material injection molding.
Okay.
Those molds have separate injection systems for each material. It's kind of like having two mini factories built into one mold.
Interesting.
One for each material. And of course, those molds are also pretty complex to design. You have to carefully control the temperature and pressure for each material, make sure they flow together correctly, all of that.
It sounds like a whole different ball game.
It is, yeah.
Okay, well, I think we've covered a lot of ground here. We've talked about how family molds work, the advantages, the challenges, all that stuff. If I'm a manufacturer out there listening to this, what are the key questions I should be asking myself to figure out if family molds are the right choice for my project?
The first question is, are you making a bunch of different parts, or are you just making a ton of the same part over and over? If it's the latter, a traditional mold or a multi-cavity mold might be a better bet.
Right. If you only need one type of part, there's no point in using a family mold.
Exactly. Another big question is, are all the parts you need made from the same material? We talked about that. That's really important for family molds.
Yeah. If they're different materials, you're out of luck.
Pretty much, yeah. You'd have to look at other options. Mm-hmm. And then the final thing to consider is your production volume.
Okay.
Family molds tend to be most cost effective for what we call small to medium production runs. So if you're talking about making millions and millions of parts, a multi-cavity mold might be the more efficient way to go.
So it's all about weighing your needs against the capabilities of the mold, right?
Exactly.
Family molds are a great tool, but they're not a magic solution for every situation.
Right. And like with anything in manufacturing, there are always trade-offs. The key is to understand your options and choose the approach that best fits your specific goals and challenges.
Right. Well, I think this has given our listener a lot to think about. But before we wrap up, I'm curious, are there any new trends or innovations happening in family mold technology? Anything we should be keeping an eye on?
Oh, definitely. There's always something new happening in the world of molds. It's really exciting. One of the big trends right now is using something called conformal cooling channels.
Conformal cooling.
Yeah. So you know how traditionally the cooling channels in a mold are just like straight lines?
Yeah.
Well, with conformal cooling, the channels are actually designed to follow the shape of the part.
Oh, interesting. So they're like curved and contoured.
Exactly. It allows for much more targeted and efficient cooling. You can really fine-tune where the heat is being extracted from the part.
And that helps with those uneven cooling problems we were talking about.
Big time. It can dramatically reduce cycle times and improve part quality, especially for those really complex parts with all the nooks and crannies.
I can imagine. It sounds pretty high-tech.
It is. And we're seeing a lot of cool new manufacturing technologies being used to make these molds, things like 3D printing and laser sintering. They allow you to create those really intricate conformal cooling channels that you just couldn't do with traditional machining methods.
Wow. So we're using cutting-edge technology to create the tools that are then used to make all our everyday products.
It's like layers of innovation, right?
Totally. So conformal cooling is one trend. Anything else on the horizon?
Oh, yeah. Tons of stuff. We're seeing more and more sensors being integrated into family molds.
Sensors? Like what kind of sensors?
Sensors that can measure temperature, pressure, even the flow of the material inside the mold, all in real time.
So it's like having a smart mold that can tell you exactly what's going on inside.
Exactly. You can use that data to fine-tune the molding process, prevent defects, and just generally make things run more smoothly.
That's amazing. So you can catch potential problems before they even happen.
That's the goal. We're even starting to see some early applications of artificial intelligence, you know, AI, being used to analyze that sensor data and make adjustments to the process on the fly.
So the mold is basically learning and adapting as it goes.
In a way, yeah. It's pretty wild stuff.
It sounds like the future of manufacturing is going to be super high tech. Blending mold making with software and data analysis and AI, it's kind of mind-blowing.
It really is. And it's all happening so fast. Who knows what we'll be able to do in a few years?
Maybe we'll have self-healing molds. Or molds that can change their shape to make different parts on demand.
Wouldn't that be something?
It would. Well, this deep dive has been really eye-opening. We started with that Swiss Army knife analogy, and I'm really starting to see how that applies. Family molds are all about versatility and precision, but there's a whole lot of hidden complexity beneath the surface.
And a lot of really smart people working behind the scenes to make those molds work as efficiently and effectively as possible.
Absolutely. Well, listener, if you're out there thinking about using family molds for your next project, remember those key questions we talked about. Do you need a variety of different parts? Are they all made from the same material? What are your production volumes?
And don't be afraid to explore those new technologies we talked about. Conformal cooling, sensor integration, AI, all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's evolving all the time, and it can really make a difference in your production process.
So family molds, they're a powerful tool, but it's all about understanding their strengths and limitations and using them strategically.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
All right. Well, that's about all the time we have for today's deep dive. Listener, I hope you enjoyed this exploration of the world of family molds. It's a fascinating topic. And as always, keep learning, keep exploring, and keep pushing the boundaries of what's possible.